This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 1st of 2021. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, what happens when college enrollments rise and housing stock doesn't? We'll get the answer in our latest installment in our regional series on the ongoing housing crunch. We'll also get an update on where things stand with the ongoing legal battle over the Rocky Flats nuclear site. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You, and herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower at the bottom of the hour. And then it's a public affair. Today we'll hear about how the synthetic opioid, fentanyl, is fueling a fatal overdose crisis in Boulder County. At the top of the hour, Maeve Conran will bring us Just Solutions, a look at how to navigate difficult conversations with loved ones who may be spreading misinformation on everything from politics to COVID. At 9:30, Neil Smart will be in the Boulder studio to bring you the Morning Sound Alternative and a mix of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sutler.
State health officials say that despite a slight decline in the number of people who have tested positive for COVID-19, they fear the new Omicron variant could change that. No cases of the new variant have been detected in Colorado or the U.S. as of yesterday. However, Dr. Rachel Herlihy, the state's epidemiologist, said at a news conference that there's still much experts don't know about it. Three methods are being used in the state to detect the Omicron variant, including monitoring wastewater to find virus particles in feces. The method can detect the virus in the community even if individuals are showing no symptoms. The Colorado Sun reported that toilets across the Front Range have served as an early warning system for outbreaks of the virus. Other methods include testing at state and some private laboratories and genetic sequencing. Yesterday, more than 1,460 people were hospitalized with COVID in Colorado, which is a slight decrease. Scott Bookman, the state's incident commander, said that the safest thing a person can do is to get the vaccine and wear a mask when in indoor public spaces. The Longmont City Council yesterday decided to return to virtual meetings amidst concerns about the pandemic. The motion to go back to online meetings was passed by a vote of 5-1 with Aaron Rodriguez, the sole no vote. According to the Times Call, city staff told council members they were well prepared to return to virtual meetings. Councilperson Tim Waters said that he felt going virtual would set the best example for the public. The first virtual meeting will occur December 7th. The city of Denver is being criticized for quietly increasing its efforts to prevent encampments of unhoused people from being set up in a downtown neighborhood. The Denver Post reports that crews are clearing sidewalks and rights of way at least three times a week in a 10-block area in the Five Points neighborhood. The area is marked with signs that say it is a permanent zone for what some call sweeps. However, the city does not provide seven days' notice to people camping in that area in advance of a sweep, a requirement that was ordered by a federal court earlier this year. Andy McNulty, an attorney who sued the city against its camping ban, said that Denver officials are attempting an end run around the requirements of the court's injunction. He said they are putting up a zone that essentially says you can't exist here if you are an unhoused person. Last week, McNulty and an attorney for the city appeared in front of a federal appeals court arguing about the injunction. According to the Post, the city's goal is to have the limits on its camping ban removed. Open enrollment for health insurance under the Connect for Health Colorado marketplace started November 1st, and as of Monday, there's been a 14% increase from the same period last year. The Denver Gazette reports that three-quarters of the applicants qualified for assistance, an increase over the two previous years. A spokesperson for Connect for Health said that factors leading to the increase in how many qualify for assistance may include the impact from the state's reinsurance program and from federal pandemic stimulus money. She said two-thirds of the people who sought but didn't qualify for aid last year can do so this year. Three teenagers have been charged as adults for shooting at the Hinckley High School in Aurora about 2 weeks ago. Three students were injured and had to go to hospital when the noonday incident occurred on November 19th. The Arapahoe County District Attorney's Office filed the charges yesterday against boys who are all 16 years old. Each faces multiple felony charges, including attempted murder and assault. Nine News reports that police said that they are seeking a warrant to arrest a fourth 16-year-old for the assaults. The incident was the second that week. A shooting outside Aurora Central High School occurred just days before. Since then, Aurora Public School officials have closed campuses during lunch and are providing additional security. The U.S. Forest Service has imposed Stage 1 fire restrictions for forests along the Front Range, which takes effect today at noon. The warm and dry conditions and recent fires led to the action. People are prohibited from, among other things, using fire, including charcoal or briquettes, outside a permanent fire pit that the agency has installed. Smoking is also prohibited, except in enclosed vehicles or buildings. The agency said in a release that the restrictions apply to Arapahoe and Roosevelt National Forests in the Clear Creek, Boulder, and Canyon Lakes districts, along with the Pawnee National Grassland. In addition to the U.S. Forest Service, Boulder County has also imposed Stage 1 restrictions in western areas. Warm and dry conditions will continue, mostly sunny in today's weather, with highs around 70 and an overnight low of 45. Tomorrow, sunny and even a bit warmer with the highs in the low 70s. A gradual cool down will start on Friday, but it will still be warmer than usual. Right now in Boulder and Denver, it's 45 and 36 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Durango's Fort Lewis College has seen one of the largest increases in their freshman year class in years. It's putting a strain on campus student housing, and it comes at a time when the college is trying to tackle workforce housing issues for faculty and staff. Now officials are turning to several possible solutions to create housing for both students and employees. Sarah Flower reports for KSUT and Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
So what comes to mind is, like, definitely, you know, find, like, the access to housing. But it's like, even when you do...
Students at Fort Lewis College voice their concerns to the administration and local elected officials about housing issues on and off campus, a topic the college says has been on the forefront of their agenda. Steve Schwartz is the chief operating officer and vice president for finance and administration at the college. He says prior to COVID, the college hired a firm to do a demand study to assess affordable housing needs for faculty, staff, and students. That project was halted due to the pandemic. Now, Fort Lewis is picking up right where they left off. As part of Phase 1, they've hired Project Moxie, the same affordable housing company the city of Durango is using. Schwartz says they're in the process of looking at how to get out of this housing crisis.
We've come up with a kind of a three-pronged solution. One would be to construct faculty staff housing on campus. Another one would be to enter into a mortgage assistance program. And then the third one, which I think is actually the most exciting one, from my perspective, is certainly the solution that is unique maybe in small mountain communities is working with our regional partners to develop a solution.
Those regional partners include the city of Durango, Durango 9R School District, and La Plata County. Schwartz feels strongly that this housing dilemma is not one that the college can solve alone. Instead of reinventing the wheel, Schwartz says that the college is looking at different programs across the country that have worked at other higher education institutions, like Colorado University and their mortgage assistance program. Jen Lopez, president of Project Moxie, is working with faculty to assess their needs and hear ideas around what would work best for them.
I have a faculty advisory group that I meet with that's been guiding the process. This was what we consider a phase one, just understanding sort of the landscape of what's happening and how the challenges around housing for the college, how it's being experienced in the community, but also the opportunities. So, yes, we have a problem. What are some of the solutions directly for the college and directly for the community? And mostly, how do we start leveraging resources across the community?
Part of that leverage for Fort Lewis College is building on land that they already have. Schwartz explains ideas that the college has that would be more viable for the future of the institution.
Longer term, what we're looking at is creating more apartment living on campus, because that's really, really where we're seeing the need on campus. We believe that we have enough residence hall stock is where our freshmen live, but it's really our upperclassmen that are now coming back and saying, hey, I want to live on campus. In the past, those students many times would have preferred to live in town. Now with the tightness in town in terms of housing availability, they've come back and said, you know, we really want to live on campus, but we're a little behind the eight ball in terms of building that capacity. So we've identified plots of land where we can build apartment complexes kind of on the east side of campus. That is our next step, and we're actually going to be starting to move on that into the spring semester.
This semester, the college is renting out over 100 units at a La Quinta Inn hotel and has roughly 60 units at 1304 apartments in town. Fort Lewis is also entering phase two of the process, which is hiring a college representative that would be the interface between Fort Lewis and the developer, which Schwartz is hopeful they will hire by the end of the year.
The end goal is, I would like to say, within 18 to 24 month period, we would actually have something that would be habitable. In between there, you'd see it coming out of the ground and, you know, working through it. Big challenge is going to be just working out the contractual aspects of this.
Reporting for KSUT News, I'm Sarah Flower.
This story was part of a Rocky Mountain Community Radio reporting collaboration on affordable housing. It's funded by the Solutions Journalism Network. The Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center is appealing a judge's decision dismissing their lawsuit that challenged the issue of Rocky Flats nuclear weapons manufacturing site as a wildlife refuge open to hikers and bikers. The refuge contains about 11 miles of trails where triggers for nuclear warheads were assembled for more than 40 years and was closed decades ago. Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Randall Weiner, the attorney for the Peace and Justice Center, who says the controversy started with the placement of the nuclear facility just upwind from Denver.
It was not the greatest site for construction of nuclear weapons during the Cold War because it was so close to an urban metropolitan area. And that was borne out because there were a couple of major fires that occurred during the operation of the plant. Eventually, the FBI raided it to see whether or not the violations that were alleged were occurring, and they were. And ultimately, within a year after the raid, the plant was shut down. And then it moved into cleanup mode. My clients were concerned about the extent of the cleanup. The area around the plant, the buffer zone it was called, became this Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge. And my clients have been pushing to make sure that the environmental reviews of that plant are thorough. And this case is a continuation of that battle to make sure that the residual plutonium that's on the property has been either cleaned up or is non-existent sufficiently to make it a safe place for people to bike and hike and conduct some horseback riding.
The Denver Post wrote that the Peace and Justice Center said that the appeal was the last and best chance to close the refuge and that the government did not consider the environmental issues related to the residual plutonium contamination. My question to you is, who is at risk of contamination?
The lawsuit brought up a number of issues related to contamination that my clients believe the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service overlooked when they considered whether to open Rocky Flats to additional trails. And among those issues was the fact that the prior manager of the refuge believed that trails should avoid what he called the plutonium plume that's in the eastern end of the refuge in what's known as the windblown area, because it's just downwind of the central core, which is a continuing Superfund site. The current regime for the refuge ignored the policy of its predecessor to keep trails away from this plutonium plume. And that's one critical area we think that any environmental review should consider. Another important review should be done of lands that were incorporated into the refuge after any plutonium sampling was done. The plutonium sampling on the refuge ended in the mid-2005, and in 2012, an area of the refuge, the southwest corner, called the Section 16 parcel, was incorporated into the refuge. And during our preliminary injunction hearing, we had witnesses who talked about some of the potential contamination there, including a submerged white 55-gallon drum. We had an FBI agent testify that a submerged 55-gallon drum that was painted white came from Rocky Flats. We had another worker testify he would put plutonium in the drum to ship off to one of the nuclear facilities around the country that took it, like WIP. And that's another critical area for environmental reviews to look at. Is it safe to put trails on this Section 16 parcel when it's never been sampled for residual plutonium? Those are some of the environmental issues that the government should be looking at before they open this area to human beings. And my clients are pushing in every court they can to make sure that these environmental reviews are done. And frankly, people should applaud that, because if there are going to be thousands of visitors to an old nuclear facility site, we should make sure that that site is safe for people.
Why is it so crucial to continue advocating for the closure of the refuge?
There was an environmental review that was done back in 2004. But no environmental review of the trail system and these additional trails I've talked about since that time. And there have been a number of developments that are worthy of environmental review, including the fact that there was flooding, major flooding in the area in 2013, many Boulderites are familiar with. There was the inclusion of the South West corner, the Section 16 parcel, and that's never been reviewed. There is the policy, long-running policy of not putting trails near the plutonium plume on the eastern section of the refuge. And those are all part of an environmental review that would normally be done under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. And since those reviews weren't done, my clients felt the need to challenge the decision of the refuge and appeal this, ultimately because the issues related to the refuge are environmental, and the Fish and Wildlife Service shouldn't pretend they don't exist, or at least pretend that nothing further needed to be done after 2004. So my clients are insisting on thoroughness. They're insisting on an environmental review that looks closely at where these trails should go to make it the least risky for people to be hiking and biking. And those are things the government really should have been doing 20 years ago. There's been a longstanding policy on the part of the government to ignore some of these dangers and try to hide them under the rug. And the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center and the other neighborhood groups that are pushing this are not willing to let this be hidden under the rug. It's been four decades of people power trying to open the public's eyes to the dangers of this facility, which had its place during the Cold War, but now could be a dangerous relic. And how dangerous? That's what these future studies will determine.
I have been speaking with Randall Weiner, attorney for the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. This is the week the Build Back Better Act goes to the Senate after being trimmed back by 50% in the House. Colorado's own Senator Michael Bennett has been talking with Joe Manchin about the provisions Manchin opposes, such as the paid family leave section of the bill, telling Manchin this is an important pro-worker aspect of the bill. Here are four components of the House's bill that are at risk in the Senate and being discussed right now. 1. Paid family leave. Lawmakers initially wanted a paid leave policy offering 12 weeks of paid time off to full-time workers. Almost 3/4 of Americans support this, so Nancy Pelosi is keeping it in as a 4-week provision. Manchin, though, says, quote, "I just think it's the wrong place to put it because it's a social expansion." 2. Higher state and local tax SALT deduction. The House bill raises the cap on the amount of salt individuals can deduct from their federal taxes from $10,000 to $80,000, benefiting mostly wealthy homeowners in high-tax states like New York and New Jersey and California. This is extremely unpopular among many progressives. Bernie Sanders and Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez suggest imposing an income limit as high as $550,000 on who can benefit from a salt deduction. 3. Tax credits for union-made electric vehicles. At least one component of the $550 billion Democrats have set aside for climate mitigation may be axed in the Senate to provide electric vehicle purchasers with $7,500 fully deductible tax credit. The purchasers of the vehicle from an American manufacturer with union-represented workers would get an additional $4,500 worth of tax credits, benefiting companies like Ford and General Motors. But Toyota, which manufactures in Manchin's home state of West Virginia, could lose because Toyota buyers would get only the $7,500 base credit. 4. Immigration reform. America has not enacted major immigration reform since 1986. Democrats sought to change that through reconciliation in a simple majority vote, but Senate parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough said that such a provision would equate to, quote, a tremendous and enduring policy change that dwarfs its budgetary impact, close quote. So the trimmed-down Build Back Better bill would give undocumented immigrants who entered the U.S. illegally before 2011 the ability to apply for renewable employment authorizations, protecting them from the risk of deportation for five-year stretches at a time. But Manchin opposes changes to immigration policy that don't include enhanced border security. Quote, for us to even be talking about immigration without border security is ludicrous, he said. If you have thoughts on the four threatened provisions of the Build Back Better Act that are being considered by the Senate, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I thought I would share a little bit about that I had that thing that's going around. You know, the one whose name I probably shouldn't say, but you know, the one that's in the media all the time. So I want to share a little bit about what I did to take care of myself. I found raw garlic to be a great ally, and baked sweet potatoes with 3 or 4 cloves of raw garlic is super great. Garlic is antimicrobial. It's a bronchodilator, and it helps to fluidify the blood and super infection fighting. Certainly staying off of dairy products is a good idea because that just creates more phlegm, and we don't want that when we're feeling phlegmy. And other good things to eat might be miso soup, applesauce with cinnamon, sauteed onions with chili powder or curry powder. And you may feel like you just don't want to eat that much. There are so many herbal allies that can get us through times of colds and flu. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can go visit a natural food store and see things that are in combination that have isatis, andrographis, elderberry, echinacea. There's so many that we can use in combination. I think one of the secrets is dosing every couple of hours that you're awake. If you're trying to get through something that is really in your face right now and you're feeling really bad. And of course, there's also a plethora of vitamins that can be our allies. Vitamin C, D, zinc. If one's throat is sore, I find that zinc lozenges are great because they inhibit the replication of cold and flu viruses. And silver is not something I would take on a regular basis, but there's all kinds of colloidal silver supplements out there that work against a wide range of pathogens. So it's good to know that there are all kinds of things we can do. Also, diffusing essential oils like eucalyptus or fir or even lavender in the room helps to put some antimicrobial compounds in the air so that the other people around you might not need to get sick and that you can recover more quickly and be less congested at night. Of course, rest is really important. And if you've already got some eucalyptus oil, it could be used. in the bath. And it's really important to be paying attention to our health all the time, just not right now, but we make choices every day that can undermine our health or support it. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Rosanna Longo-Better, Sarah Flower, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, then a public affair. But first, these headlines from the BBC.